1. The Forest of Orphans. I was about to die. Worse, I was about to die with bastards. Not that I was afraid to die, but maybe who you die with is important. It's important who's with you when you're born, after all. If everybody's wearing clean linen and silk and looking down at you squirming in your bassinet, you'll have a very different life than if the first thing you see when you open your eyes is a billy goat. I looked over at Pogren and decided he looked uncomfortably like a billy goat, what with his long head, long beard, and unlovely habit of chewing even when he had no food. Pogren used to be a farmer. Frilla, just next to him in rusty ringmail, used to be his wife. Now they were thieves, but not subtle thieves, like me. I was trained in lockpicking, wall-scaling, fall-breaking, lie-weaving, vice-throwing, trap-making, trap-finding, and not a half-bad archer, fiddler, and knife-fighter besides. I also knew several dozen cantrips, small but useful magic. Alas, I owed the Taker's Guild so much money for my training that I found myself squatting in the Forest of Orphans with these thick bastards, hoping to rob somebody the old-fashioned way. You know, threaten them with death. It pays surprisingly well being a highwayman. I was only a month in with this group, and we had robbed wagons with too few guards, kidnapped stragglers off groups with too many, and even sold a merchant's boy to a group of crooked soldiers who were supposed to be chasing us. Killing never came easily to me, but I was willing to throw a few arrows to keep myself out of the shite. It's the way the world was made. I had more than half what I needed for my Lammas payment to the guild to keep them from making my tattoo worse. The tattoo was bad enough already, thank you very much. So there I was, crouched in ambush, watching a figure walking alone down the white road toward us. I had a bad feeling about our potential victim, and not just because she walked like nobody was going to hurt her, and not just because ravens were shouting in the trees. I had studied magic, you see, just a little, and this traveller had some. I wasn't sure what kind, but I felt it like a chill or that charge in the air before a storm that raises goose flesh. Besides, what could one woman have on her that would be worth much split seven ways? And let's not forget our leader's double share, which would end up looking more like half. I looked at Pogren and gave him a little shake of my head. He looked back at me, the whites of his eyes standing out because he'd mudded himself, all but his hands, which he left white to make hand canting easier. Pogren used a soldier's hand cant he'd learned in the Goblin Wars, only half like the thieves' cant I learned at the Low School. His two missing fingers didn't help matters. When I shook my head at him, he canted at me. I thought he said to repair my purse, so I checked to see if money was falling out, but then I realized he was saying I should check to see if my balls were still attached. Right, he was impugning my courage. I pointed at the stranger and made the sign for a magicker, not confident they would know that one, and I'm not sure if Pogren did. He told me there was a magicker behind me, or at least that's what I thought at first, but he was actually telling me to put a magicker in my arse. I looked away from the chief bastard I was about to die with and back at the woman about to kill us. Just a feeling I had. To walk alone down the white road through the Forest of Orphans, even on a pleasantly warm late summer day in the month of Ashers, you would have to be a magicker. If you weren't, you'd have to be a drunk, a foreigner, a suicide, or some sloppy marriage of the three. This one had the look of a foreigner. She had the olive tones and shaggy black hair mop of a spant, with good cheekbones like they have there, a gift from the old empire, and there was no telling her age. Youngish, 30. Built small but hard. Those sleepy eyes could well be a killer's, and she was dressed for fighting. She had a round shield on her back, a gorget to save her throat a cutting, and if I didn't miss my guess, she wore light chainmail under her shirt. The blade on her belt was a bit shorter than most, probably a spadine or bullnutter, which would definitely make her a spantian. Their knights used to be the best horsemen in the world, back when the world had horses. Now they relied on the sword and shield art of old Kesh, known as Kalarbajat, taught from the age of 8. Spants don't take threats well. I was all but sure if we moved it would be to kill, not intimidate. Would Pogren think it was worth bothering? Money pouches hung on the stranger's belt, but would Poggin order the attack just for that? No, he would be looking at the shield. Now that the maybe spanth was closer, I could see the rosy blush on the wood rim peeking over the stranger's shoulder, marking the shield as one of springwood, a tree we cut so fast during the goblin wars it was damn near extinct. The last groves grew in Aspanthia under the king's watchful eye, where trespassing would get you a noose and trespassing with a saw would get you boiled. Thing about springwood is, if it's properly cured and cared for, it's known to stay living after it's been cut and heal itself. And as long as it's alive, it's hard to burn. Poggin wanted that shield. As much as I hoped he'd move his cupped palm down like he was snuffing a candle, I knew he would jab his thumb forward and the attack would start. Three scarred brawlers stood beside Poggin, and I heard the other two archers shifting near me. One superstitious young squirt of piss named Nervous, though we called him Nervous, kissing the grubby fox pendant carved from deer bone he wore on a cord around his neck. His pale, wall-eyed sister shifted in the leaves behind him. I never liked it that we worshipped the same god, they and I, but they were Galts like me. Born with the black tongues that mark us all, and Galtish thieves fall in with the Lord of Foxes. We can't help ourselves. I pulled an arrow with a bodkin point, good for slipping between links of chainmail, and knocked it on the string. We watched our captain. He watched the woman. The raven screamed. Poggin jabbed the thumb. What happened next happened fast. I pulled and loosed first, feeling the good release of pressure in my fingers and the bite of the bowstring on my inner arm. I also had that warm heart feeling when you know you shot true. If you haven't handled a bow, I can't explain it. I heard the hiss of my fellow's arrows chasing mine, but the target was already moving. She crouched and turned so fast she seemed to disappear behind the shield. Never mind that it wasn't a large shield, she made herself small behind it. Two arrows hit the springwood and bounced, and where my own arrow went, I couldn't see. Then there went Poggin and his three brawlers, Poggin's big glaive up in the air like an oversized kitchen knife on a stick, Frilla's broadsword behind her neck, ready to chop. Two others we'll just call spear and axe running behind. The spanth would have to stand to meet their charge, and when she did, I would stick her to the knee. Now things got confusing. I saw a motion in the trees across the road. I thought three things at once. A raven is breaking from the tree line. The ravens have stopped shouting. That raven is too big. A raven the size of a stag rushed onto the road. I made a little sound in my throat without meaning to. It's an unforgettable thing seeing your first war corvid, especially if it's not on your side. It plucked Spear's foot out from under her, spilling her on her face, then began shredding her back with its hardened beak. I woke myself out of just watching it and thought I should probably knock another arrow, but the corvid was already moving at Axe, whose name was actually Gerald. I tell you this not because you'll know him long, but because what happened to him was so awful I feel bad just calling him Axe. Gerald sensed the bird coming up on his flank and stopped his run, wheeling to face it. He didn't have time to do more than raise his axe before the thing speared him with its beak where no man wants beak nor spear. His heavy chainmail hauberk measured to his knees, but those birds punch holes in skulls. So what was left of Gerald's parts under the chainmail didn't bear thinking about. He dropped, too badly hurt even to yell. Frilla yelled, though. I glanced left and saw Poggin bent over, covered in blood, but I think it was Frilla's. She was bleeding enough for both of them, spattering the ground from a vicious underarm cut that looked to run elbow to tit. As the spanth switched directions, I caught a glimpse of her naked sword, which was definitely a spadeen, sharp enough to stab, heavy enough to chop. A good sword, maybe the best short sword ever made, and she could use it. She moved like a blur now, stepping past Frilla and booting her broadsword out of reach. Spear, her back in tatters, was just getting up on all fours like a baby about to try walking. Beside me, Nervous cried out, "Awain, bait!" Galtish for Death Bird, and dropped his bow and ran, his older sister turning tail with him, leaving me the only archer in the trees. I had no shot at the spant, who kept her shield raised toward me, even as she lopped spear's hand off below the wrist. Funny what the mind keeps close. I glimpsed the shield closer now and saw its central steel boss was wrought in the shape of a blowing storm cloud's face, like the kind on the edge of a map. Pogren had taken up his dropped glaive and was trying to ward the corvid circling him. It bit at the glaive's head twice, easily avoiding Pogren's jab and not seeming to notice my missed arrow. These things don't move predictably, and at 20 paces an arrow doesn't hit the instant it flies. Now the warbird grabbed the glaive head and wrenched sideways so Pogren had to turn with it or lose the weapon. Pogren turned at just the instant the spant leapt, fast and graceful as a panther, and cut him deep just above the heel. Our leader dropped and curled up into a moaning ball. The fight on the road was over. Shite. I knocked another arrow as Spant and Bird looked at me. The bow wasn't going to be enough. I had a fine fighting knife in the front of my belt. In a tavern fight, it would turn a gazer inside out, but it was useless against chain. At my back, I had a nasty spike of a rondelle dagger, good to punch through mail. But against that sword in that woman's hand, not to mention the fucking bird, it might as well have been a twig. They moved closer. I could outrun the spant, but not the bird. I pissed myself a little, I'm not ashamed to tell you. Archer, she said in that ar tap in a spantian accent. Come out and help your friends. That they weren't really my friends wasn't a good enough reason to leave them maimed and wrecked on the white road. Nor was the fact that they deserved it. The spant had fished an arrow from the bloody tangle of shirt under her arm, matched its fletching to the arrow still in my side quiver, and said, "Good shot." She gave me the arrow back. She also gave me a mouthful of wine from her wine skin, good, thick, black wine, probably from a spantia like she was. Pogren, grimacing and dragging himself to lean against a tree, got nothing. Frella, who seemed within 2 drops of bleeding herself unconscious, got nothing, even though she looked hopefully at the spant while I tied her arm off with 1 stocking and a stick. The wine was just for me, and only because I had shot through. That's a spant for you. The surest way to make one love you is to hurt him. To speak of the injured, Gerald was still unconscious, which was good. Let him sleep. No stander wants to wake up a squatter, especially one barely old enough to know the use of what he'd lost. Spear had picked up her lost hand and run into the forest like she knew a sower on of hands whose shop closed soon. I don't know where the bird went, or didn't at the time. It was like it disappeared. As for the spant, she was off down the road like nothing had happened past a scratch in a bloody shirt. But something had happened. Meeting that Espanthian birder had just changed my fate.